Looking for a new home should be exciting, not frustrating. That's why Homes.com might just be the best home shopping site out there. Imagine searching for your dream home without ads cluttering your view. Homes.com's sleek, beautifully designed, ad-free interface makes your search simple and distraction-free. And if you're a parent, you know how important school information is. Homes.com gets it. They're the only site with detailed school and district info from multiple sources, including reviews from Niche. Plus, they've got a super comprehensive and transparent agent directory, making it easy to find the right expert to guide your journey. Oh, and here's a game changer. Homes.com always connects you directly with a listing agent who knows the home best. They even go beyond the basics, offering the most in-depth neighborhood content of any home shopping site, packed with details to help you find a community that feels like home. And the search tools? Unmatched. With 22 data visualization layers, 7 environmental layers, and filters for commute times and architectural styles, Homes.com truly is the home search you've been searching for. Go to Homes.com. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, a Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 45% off select styles and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 45% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Wow.
What's up?
I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
We coming to H-Town. Let's get to work in, man. Let's go.
Great day. Great day. Oh, give me some juice, baby.
Oh, yeah.
One more knee will do it at the Houston 14-yard line. 40 seconds to go. Mahomes gets under center, takes a knee. It is over at Arrowhead Stadium. The Houston Texans fall to the Kansas City Chiefs 27-19. So the Texans lose to Kansas City and look forward to Christmas Day in just a few days to take on the Baltimore Ravens. A costly day as far as injuries go, and the Texans take the L along the way, dropping their record to 9-6.
Yeah, that Mark hit it. That was Mark Vandermeer on the call. He hit it on that last part there. Welcome in, everybody, on a Reaction Monday. Hope you had a great weekend other than that game. Christmas just a couple of days away, as we welcome you in on a Monday, a Reaction Monday to Payne and Pendergast. Sean Pendergast alongside Seth Payne. And Seth, at the end of that day, I didn't even care what the final score was. I think the Texans, in terms of what it sounded like all week, they were looking to accomplish in terms of the game itself, I feel like they did. It sounded like all week the goal was just to see how they stood in with the Chiefs, and they did stand in with the Chiefs. They had a possession with 5 minutes to go, with a chance to tie the game. And as most of the second half went, they didn't do that. But I didn't even care about the final score. The Tank Dell injury looms, over everything.
The Tank Dell injury especially, because in the first half, it felt like, oh, okay, they're doing some things. It wasn't like they were a rolling ball of death or anything, but they were connecting with Tank Dell. I think because of the injuries in the secondary, Spagnuolo wanted to play a little bit more zone than he typically does, and they took advantage of it. The Texans totally took advantage of it. And, you know, including on that pass to Dell, that was a great play. And then you get into the second half, and they're able to blitz deeper into the second half. Yeah. The Chiefs were able to blitz. Texans can't handle it. And really, the sum total of it is you look at the difference between the Chiefs and the Texans, with or without their best players. Man, you get into the fourth quarter, you get down in the red zone, it's first and goal on the 10, and somehow it ends up third and 20. And you can't live that way. You can't be taking delay of games. You can't be running out of bounds for a 5-yard loss when you could just throw the ball away. All these little details. And then the other big difference is just the negative run plays. The negative plays in general.
About the screens?
Because the screens, yeah. The wide receiver screens were like a bad run play. You know, the Chiefs aren't starting out second and 10, second and 12 nearly as often as the Texans are.
Nope.
And so they're worlds apart in terms of their entire operation offensively.
That is a clean operation over there, man. I don't care what the numbers say, and you cited these numbers quite a bit last week, appropriately so, that, hey, you know, offensively, these are two very similar teams this year in terms of output. You watch that game, you go, no, these are two very dissimilar teams in terms of knowing what needs to get done in order to move the football, score points, and win games.
And the wide receiver screens are just that's a rolling ball of delight is what that is.
For the other team, it's a rolling ball of pastries for the Chiefs.
So it's a quick turnaround. So today's like normal Friday.
Yeah, right. They play in 2
everybody.
Days.
So did you flush that one? The Texans have no choice but to flush it. But then the injuries are the other big part of that game. The biggest, most devastating thing emotionally, obviously, is Tank. And who, again, did he have 6 receptions?
See, the last reception was his 6th reception for 98 yards.
Which I believe ties his season high for receptions.
6 or 7. So he had one other big game this season. Yeah. I think it was when Nico was out. Yeah, was it the Jets?
Yeah,
he had a big game against the Jets.
Yep. So he had matched his production through just early into the third quarter. And
that was the Tank from last year.
Yeah.
That was the Tank from last year.
The Steelers and Ravens game, since that's relevant as well. I think in looking at the Steelers in that Ravens game, I know if all you did was look at the final score, you think, oh, the Ravens just destroyed the Steelers. That was a very close game, and it went back. And the beginning of the fourth quarter was crazy.
See, it was crazy.
Multiple turnovers.
It was crazy. And similar to the Texans, the Steelers had the ball with just a few minutes to go in the game, and Russ throws a pick 6.
It ends up coming down to, okay, who's the better quarterback in this game? But what I would say about the Steelers was, man, the Steelers were rolling a lot of times with Ben Skoranek. Pruitt, this is like their fourth string tight end.
Who was in Texans camp this
year? Oh, my gosh, Sean. I mean,
Skoranek would be their second best wide receiver right now.
Van Jefferson caught a touchdown. Kelvin Austin was a huge factor in this game. They're doing more with less. And if I come out of that game and I'm a Steelers fan, there's no George Pickens. Hey, I know George Pickens is coming back. I would actually feel like, all right, we've still got a puncher's chance.
Just don't throw a pick 6
in the playoffs.
Yeah. On the road, you know.
Yeah.
They're still leading the division, by the way.
Yeah, that's right.
The Steelers are. And the tiebreaker.
So the Ravens have something to play for.
Yes.
But also just, man, there's a difference in conjuring up the optimism for the Steelers compared to the Texans.
No doubt.
And I don't know who the Texans rest is. You want to rest people? Who?
Yeah.
I don't know who you rest.
You're bringing
There's
up,
nobody left.
No. They are banged up. And if Tank Dell hadn't gotten hurt, we'd be talking about Jimmy Ward today. You know, Jimmy Ward got hurt. They're all out for this game.
Shaq Mason. Yeah, this short week. The worst possible outcome for this short week was all the injuries.
So the Tank is the big one. That's the one that, I mean, obviously just the optics of it that hit the emotional cord, particularly with C.J. Stroud. Here was Ian Rapoport yesterday on the NFL Network with the update on Tank Dell.
One of the scarier injuries we have seen. Tank Dell with that acrobatic touchdown catch comes down a little friendly fire from his teammate. You could see obvious pain dealing with a knee injury. And my understanding is this is a dislocated kneecap for Tank Dell, which is why you could see teammates immediately say, don't move, because the kneecap was, frankly, not where it was supposed to be. And if you move your leg, if you bend it, you can do serious damage. Tank Dell was transported immediately to University of Kansas Medical Center to stay overnight. That is where he remained, mostly as a precaution, wanted to make sure he had the best care possible, taking him to a trauma one center, a tier one center. That is where he remains. He has not had surgery yet. To my knowledge, it is still possible, but it has not happened yet. It is unclear when Tank Dell will be able to return to the field. He is, safe to say, right now out indefinitely. So the Houston Texans will be moving forward without one of their star receivers.
Okay, so we should make it clear. That report was from yesterday morning. Tank is back in Houston now.
Yeah.
He's back in Houston now. They are still, the rest of that report all holds up because they are still, I think, determining, you know, the damage, the full extent of the damage, what the next steps are. I don't want to speculate recklessly.
I don't
want to
speculate
like
at all.
Yeah,
I mean, if it was, I wouldn't want to say just, but air quotes, just a dislocated kneecap. That's a better prognosis. But obviously, sometimes the dislocated kneecap is part of a lot of other stuff that could go on. And I will. I honestly, the fact that Tank held on to that ball when he like very clearly knew that something was wrong right away. A tip of the cap to him for that.
Yeah.
I was on the field once when. Well, I was on the sideline when Fred Taylor and Jackson. Fred Taylor is a tough dude. He's really tough. I know he got injured a lot, but he's a tough dude. He tore his groin in the middle of a play when he went to go make a cut and threw the ball to the ground. He like kind of just like he was like,
really?
You could see where it tore, and he just like threw it like, get it away from me.
Okay.
You caused me so much pain.
Okay,
so like that's Fred's not, you know, Fred is not soft whatsoever. It's just like in that sometimes with those really traumatic things, your brain just goes to mush.
Yeah.
Tip of the cap for that. Obviously, that doesn't matter at the end of the day. But it could be any number of things right now. So from something that might just be a few weeks in rehab, if all it were was a dislocated kneecap. But it feels like, you know, D'Amico yesterday called it a significant injury.
CJ was actually asked about Tank holding on to the football. This is like the eighth question of the press conference after what was clearly an emotional press conference for CJ Stroud.
I guess. It's not, bro, don't overthink it. It's the least of all worry, you know what I'm saying? So, don't worry about it. It's okay.
So wait, what did he ask?
I think he asked just about what he thought about Tank holding onto the ball going to the ground. And if you watch the whole press conference, like it was a grind for CJ going through that press conference. All the questions were about Tank. We saw CJ on the field, and you get to all these questions about his best friend possibly missing, you know, definitely missing this year, maybe missing now. Who knows? And then you get to, what do you think of him holding onto the football? CJ's like a... You know, I can see in his mind, like, we lost the game. Didn't really matter, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. I know some people thought that that question was out of line. I didn't, like, I thought it was...
I definitely didn't think it was out of line. And I don't think CJ was out of line either, you know, answering it. You know, it's just, he's answering it. Here's CJ immediately, first thing in the press conference, being asked about Tank going down.
You know, all you can do is really pray, you know? So, in the end of the day, God still gets the glory, you know? Always, no matter what happens to me, you know, I always know that I'm even up here because of the grace of Jesus and the grace of who he is in my life and Tank's life. So for anything, how it goes left or right or up or down, I always have to praise my Lord and Savior. You know, it's not easy, you know what I'm saying? But after that, you know, I try to use it as motivation, you know, and it's not easy to, you know, just let it go, you know, especially that's my best friend, you know what I mean? So not easy to move on and just keep playing, but I try to do as best as I could. And my teammates helped me up, you know, Joe helped me up, Dalton, you know, so I appreciate those guys just talking to me because, you know, I was going through it. So I appreciate them just, you know, being there for me.
That was after that answer started after what was probably, it felt like 10-second pause when he was asked that. You can tell, if you watch the video, to the very beginning of the press conference, CJ was really having to kind of, I think, gather himself, think of what the right words were. But that was a tough scene on the field, man. That was tough watching
it was,
CJ
and
whatnot.
You know, and I think, obviously CJ was very emotional afterwards. And that was polarizing to a lot of people.
It was. The only thing I would say about that is CJ was doing some things after that were uncharacteristic of him.
Yeah.
With the delay of game penalties.
Yeah.
Running out of bounds, 5 yards behind the line of scrimmage.
Yeah.
You know, so there were things where you could carve together a narrative that he maybe was still like emotionally distracted in the
whole thing. Yeah, or there was some kind of funk or something.
Yeah.
I
mean, this just in, they've been in a funk in the second half all season long.
I know. I would prefer, because you just have no idea, you know, exactly how that affects everything. I think there is something, like, I'm not over the top criticizing anybody for anything or what have you, but like, there is that element of, you know, bad things happen in a football game, and your leadership guys have to be, you know, ideally very stoic
and
forward looking and all of that. And so it causes me concern just in that, like, I don't want to sound like a monster here, but there is a little bit of detaching yourself from normal human emotions when you're in the middle of something like that, that over time maybe is something that will change.
He's 23.
So I get it, you can't criticize people's emotional responses to any given thing. You never know exactly how you're going to respond. But it was a unique situation.
Yeah. It's a good way to put it. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Reaction Monday.
Remember Jim Mattis, the general, he was the chief of the forces over there. He was telling us.
I don't.
He was the main guy over in the Gulf War, the most recent Gulf War.
Okay.
But I remember reading a story he was telling about in the first Gulf War in Desert Storm, how they're rocketing towards Baghdad, and they faced some kind of resistance, and like one of his best friends in the world was rocketing alongside him in a tank, and boom, the tank got what he thought was taken out, and he had to tell himself, like, all right, just focus, mission.
Yeah.
Like, that's an extreme example
of
everything, but that is the mode of there's a certain, you got 52 other guys out there that are also under your responsibility.
It's a fair point. It's a fair point. All right, we're off and running on a Reaction Monday. We will certainly react more to the Texans. 713-572-4610. You want to hit us on the text page?
By the way, his buddy turned out all right.
Okay, good.
Mattis's buddy.
Happy ending.
Yeah.
All right.
And spoiler alert, they took Baghdad.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Oh, thanks a lot. I was going to watch that on TV tonight. Yeah. All right. Let's circle over to the Astros for a minute. We'll get back to the Texans. But yet another big deal made on a Friday afternoon. It was a Kyle Tucker trade 2 weeks ago. This one makes me feel a whole lot more optimistic about the upcoming season. We'll talk about that coming up next.
It's a Shoppers John Deere Reaction Monday on Sports Radio 610. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
That's a good point by the texter. This is not me kowtowing to one texter. I was thinking this during the break. I'm like, man, you know what? We'll hit this Christian Walker thing for about a minute, then we'll hit it again in headlines. Because the texter says, switching to Astros now is like being at your favorite cousin's funeral and having to congratulate your 5-year-old nephew for graduating pre-K. I'm mourning over here. Scram, Astros. Good point. And I was feeling that during the break. I'm like, I don't know. We probably got to circle. There's still a ton to unpack from this Texans game. We will do that in a minute, but we should point out, because there may be people unaware of this or just didn't dig into it. The Astros made a big signing Christian Walker to a 3-year, $60 million deal makes me more optimistic about the upcoming season.
Yeah, it doesn't make you feel better about like the current state of the outfield or anything.
One signing away, Seth.
I think we're just, Alex Bregman, we've gone to his funeral, basically. Christian Walker was like your mom marrying your new dad at your dad's funeral. That was that nightmare funeral scenario.
With Isak Paredes as the best man.
Yes. Yeah, just kind of like, I'm sorry about your dad, but I'm going to be your new daddy,
by the
way. So, Christian Walker, welcome home, new daddy. Even though you're, first baseman as opposed to, you're a corner infield.
He's a good player, man. Three years, 60 mil.
And they're stacking up on pull hitters.
Pull hitters.
They want to assault the Crawford boxes.
Pull hitters,
week.
And they're going to be much better defensively at first base this year.
Yeah.
He's a gold glove caliber. He's a gold glover, literally a gold glover, not gold glove caliber. So that's good. And I think it proves, again, like Jim Crane willing to spend money on a 3-year deal.
Yeah.
You know, on a 3-year deal. Now, it hurts that they're paying $40 million for the position of first base, $20 million to Christian Walker, and $19 million to Jose Abreu to do whatever the hell he's doing this year.
Well, and that's to hurts. Go. I feel better about Christian Walker than if they'd traded for Arenado, I think. Yeah. Arenado's got a little of that Abreu in him.
He's
in his mid-30s.
Player.
He's been declining offensively. He's still good defensively. He would have been better than he would have been good defensively probably, but it just, he's not the same guy.
Nope. Nope. All right. So the Texans, man, still a ton to unpack from this game. The frustration with Bobby Slowick is not dialing back. It is bubbling up. These screen passes to the wide receivers.
Yeah.
Are drive killers, man. What are you doing? He threw, I went back, rewatched the game, went through the game log. The Texans threw four wide receiver screens in this game. Three to Nico Collins, one to Robert Woods.
Mm-hmm.
None of them worked. They all went for negative yardage, which is, that's really hard to do. I'm sorry, even like to not have one on one of these plays, a missed tackle where you at least get 4 yards. Like that's, it's almost as hard to throw four wide receiver screens for a total of 60 yards as it is to throw four wide receiver screens for a total of negative 9 yards. Here's the worst part. The down and distance situations it leaves you in. The first one put them in second and 12, put them behind the chains.
And that was a bad throw by CJ, but also I don't know if it would have gone for anything anyway.
Yeah.
Because none of these guys can block.
None of them were blocked well.
They don't know how to block.
None of them were blocked well. First one put them in second and 12. The other three were all thrown on second down and long. And so the idea from Bobby Slowick was, this is the play that'll get us in third and manageable at the very least.
Right, just an easy 5 yards.
Easy five
in theory.
Yards. Yeah.
Tunsil was lost in space. Like, Tunsil's a great pass protector. Not so much this last game, but he's atrocious as a blocker. And out in space, he might as well be Kenyon Green out in space.
Which is crazy because he's a good athlete for his position. Those three plays put them in third and 10, third and 13, third and 9.
Mm-hmm.
Let's skip to Mays too here, Connor. Robert Mays, he was with the Ringer. Who's he with now, Robert Mays? He's doing his own thing.
The Athletic, I think.
Yeah. That's right, The Athletic. On his podcast, he was talking about the screen game and how it's a big tell.
Yeah.
How well you execute your screen game is a tell as to how well coached you are offensively. Yeah. He made a comparison between the best screen game in the NFL and the worst screen game in the NFL.
The Bucs have positive 17.5 EPA on screens this year. Baker Mayfield does. That is the highest in the league. The Texans have negative 17.5. That is dead last in the NFL. So there is a 35-point difference between the best screen team and the worst screen team in the league. And the fact that it's the Bucs and the Texans feels so appropriate to me right now.
Well, that is basically a field goal swing a game between these two teams in just this one little... I mean, how many screens are you even calling a week? Three, four? For those three, four plays to be effectively a field goal swing between these two teams. And you feel it too. And this is how you get high-level offensive passing production out of an okay quarterback as opposed to a great quarterback feeling completely bogged down in the way that C.J. Stroud has been this year.
All right, so that second voice was Derek Klassen, who's at QB Klassen. Yeah,
so the one positive I would take from it is that they had a screen to Joe Mixon that was set up by faking a screen, the wide receiver screen.
By the Chiefs getting thirsty over all the bad screens.
So at least there's some semblance of a plan there of like, all right, this is how we're going to offset the tendencies and everything else like that. There was one play, there was a high school coach that said, Seth, that one screen was an RPO. So I went back and watched it. And I usually, on the RPO stuff, I defer to the high school coaches initially because they know the RPO game a lot better.
Yeah.
But I watched that. Like, no, that was it was window dressing. It wasn't supposed to be an RPO. It was him throwing out to Nico. The offensive line was not blocking up like it was going to be an RPO. And it's really, really bad. They're just all very poorly executed. Even if it was an RPO, guess what? Don't run that damn RPO if like part of your RPO is a play that you're horrible at running because your guys can't block.
Right.
Well, this isn't related to the screens. It partially is, but it's tied to the run game and everything else.
Sure.
Dalton Schultz, man, he's an atrocity. I just like you can't run that. You can't run this system with Dalton Schultz as your tight end. You can't run this system the way they're trying to run it without a tight end who can't block. Your zone runs are just dead in the water because he's getting destroyed so routinely. So, and then the screens, defenses know when they're coming. Defenses know you're going to, hey, we're off. Okay, we got that motion in the backfield. I'm coming up and I'm going to make the play. Like, it's so predictable.
So
it's so poorly executed. All of these things where D'Amico and Bobby Slowick will talk about, hey, we're good when we execute. Right. You guys are not executing on 50% of your plays, and that comes back to coaching. Yes, it's the players on the field, but it's also the fact that guys are completely lost. It's a disjointed mess.
Yeah, that
the execution is on the offensive coordinator.
Yes.
When nobody's executing anywhere, that's on the offensive coordinator.
Well, here's what's also on the offensive coordinator. Calling plays that work and staying away from plays that clearly your team can't run. Like, I posted all those the down and distance numbers and whatnot. I posted that in a tweet on Sunday. Saturday night. When I got home, I rewatched the game. Saturday night. I posted on Saturday night. And some of the replies from people were like, well, Nico should have done this on the play. Or, well, they should have done this. And I like, no, I get it. Like, when you call a play one time and it's not executed well, that's on the players.
Yeah.
When you call it four times in the first half of a game, that becomes on the offensive coordinator. It's clearly something your team is having trouble executing. Stop calling that play. When you get pulled over for drunk driving, that's on you, the drunk driver. If one of your parents or somebody then continues to put you behind the wheel drunk, that's on whoever keeps putting you behind the wheel drunk. You know what I mean? Like, it's the first one I'll allow. Okay, the offensive coordinator called a play, guys couldn't execute it. To go back and keep banging on the button three times after that,
and
put your quarterback continually in these third and long situations on the road in Kansas City. Jeez,
it's the part of it. Especially, it's almost like the thinking is, we're going to surprise him with something that, hey, Spagnuolo's a bad defensive or a really good defensive coordinator. He knows we're awful at the screens. His guys probably won't be worried about the screen because Spagnuolo's going to tell him not to worry about it.
Yeah.
I don't know. I have no idea. It's we're going to ambush him with the weakest thing that we do.
Yeah.
This offense is going to drive me insane. The way that they're wired as football players and the way they're operating, it's just so much night and day different than the way the defense operates.
It's crazy to me.
I mean, it's just crazy
they exist in the same building.
And it's gotten to the point now, too, where, look, Mixon's not always making the right reads and the run plays, but it's that snowball effect of, right, but because he's not really usually seeing the right picture anyway in front of him, so is he pressing too hard? And CJ needs to be held accountable for his multiple bad decisions in that game. But you get into that old conundrum of, okay, we know CJ's better than this, the way he's been playing since week 7. We know he should be better than that. You're not going to go out and try a new quarterback next year.
No.
But he's not. CJ's regressing under this current coaching staff.
Yep. So there's going to be, man, if this holds up, there's going to be some decisions to be made over there.
It shouldn't be a decision. That's the frustrating thing is, it shouldn't be a decision. They got to get a new offensive coordinator next year.
Yep.
But we all know, none of us are expecting it. I don't know. I'm not expecting them to make a change, which is frustrating to me because he's clearly not the answer.
Well, the problem is the execution, I keep getting told. It's the players. It's the players not executing. That's what I keep hearing.
They're pretty high paid. You just paid Dalton Schultz a new contract.
You just paid Bobby Slowick.
Yeah.
they gave Bobby Slowick a raise, reportedly. What do they do at wide receiver now? This is a situation they were in last year, so this is not a foreign situation. Tank going out for the season, unfortunately, is a 2-year annual tradition.
I will be surprised if the Texans didn't put a claim in on Deontay Johnson, who was let go by the Ravens after being suspended, basically because he chose not to play.
He pulled a Devondre Campbell.
Yeah. I think you're down at this time of the year. Nick's big on getting guys in the building and to see what happens. You know, when they get in the building, put a claim in on Deontay Johnson. I'm guessing somebody else will snap him up. The waiver wire's today, so we'll find out. But you think about the Chiefs 2 years ago, they signed a head case, Kadarius Toney, at the end of the year. And
for
a short stretch of time, a head case can be on his best behavior. Now, Kadarius Toney went full Kadarius Toney the next year. But that doesn't concern us. It's what can you do over the next few weeks. I would just love to get Deontay Johnson in the building.
We'll find out. It leaks out. I mean, I don't know if the NFL reports it or if the insiders of the NFL report it, but typically when somebody gets claimed, it'll leak out there like these are the other teams that put claims in on him that didn't get him.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
The talk is that, now keep in mind, this is the Ravens that are cutting him loose. This is a team that is in the middle of a playoff. It's the Texans' opponent this week. At the very least, get him in the building and see if he was listening in class at all while he was there. You know what I mean? Like,
I'm guessing there's the low probability of, and he definitely wasn't there the last few weeks.
I am too. I'm guessing, yeah. Deontay Johnson doesn't strike me as a pay attention and sit in the front row guy at all.
I stayed up at the office and sat in on coaches' meetings until 11 p.m.
Not that
every
guy.
Night.
Not that guy. But you're right. Like, you know, you're desperate times call for desperate measures. I would put a claim in on Deontay Johnson. I don't know, man. Some of the dudes that are on the street right now,
like, Odell Beckham Jr.
Yeah, like, okay. I mean, I just said
he's definitely.
I literally said a week ago when they put out odds on Odell Beckham Jr.'s new team after the Dolphins cut him right before the Texans game. I'm like, why are they even putting this out? Like, why there will not be a new team for Odell Beckham Jr. And yet, I'm like, okay, is he better than Jared Wayne?
Playoff experience, big moment in the Super Bowl. Yeah,
looking at the names like Hunter Renfro's out there.
Okay. Ooh,
yeah.
Poor Hunter. There was a brief moment
in
time.
He ain't that poor.
He got paid and then disappeared completely.
Yeah.
So Hunter Renfro's out there. Odell Beckham Jr. Neither of those guys known for their clean, crisp, the precision route running. Now I know people are going to say, no, I watched the highlights of Hunter. I'm talking like clean, precise, non-freelancing type stuff. So I think that what's the harm? Like, what are you, let's call up another practice squad guy that'll run the wrong route and land on one of your best receiver's legs. Yeah.
I do wonder, and I did not do this research because I just didn't have the time and it would bore me to tears, but this is what Nick Caserio and his staff are paid to do. I do wonder if out there on somebody's practice squad, there's a guy that they like or they scouted that they liked and they can pick. Now you pick him up, he's on the 53.
Yeah, you can sign anybody off anybody's practice squad.
Yeah. And they've got to agree to come here and you got to put him on the 53-man roster, but I wonder, they got to do something. Like, you cannot go into this stretch of the season with Jared Wayne as your fifth wide receiver. You just can't. And John Mechie's banged up.
Yeah.
He was limited. He was listed as limited yesterday. They didn't practice, but they had an injury report. We'll get into that in headlines. The injury report, I think, took a turn, other than the Tank Dell part, I think took a slight turn for the better for this game with a couple of names. So we'll get into that in the in headlines. Rockets win yesterday. We'll get into that. We'll dig a little more into the Christian Walker signing with the Astros. College football playoff this weekend. Busy weekend, man. We'll get into it in headlines coming up next.
But dude averages 18 yards after catch.
We get it. When you're passionate about something, you go all in. You live entirely in that world. That's exactly how Graybar is about renewable energy projects.
He's all fourth quarter, such a sleeper.
Join our league of clean energy at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Head to Safeway this week for these amazing digital deals for members. Coca-Cola, 7-Up, Dr. Pepper, and Polar Seltzer, selected varieties and sizes, buy 2 and get 3 free of equal or lesser value, plus CRV. Limit 3 free items. USDA Choice Bone-In Ribeye Steak, $7.97 per pound. Limit 2 packages. Creamy Hass Avocados, 77 cents each. Limit 4 items. Visit Safeway.com for more details. See you in the aisles.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. On January 17th, Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+. And we can't wait for you guys to see it.
And before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recap podcasts.
Yep. Each weekday beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring exclusive behind-the-scenes tidbits and brilliant insights from our cast and crew and us.
Patricia Arquette, Britt Lauer, Zach Cherry, John Turturro, the list goes on.
All your favorite Lumen employees, their friends, families, enemies, in your feed every single weekday.
And here's the best part. After that, we're going to keep going. Tune in weekly as we recap every episode of season 2. The podcast drops on the same day the episode comes out.
It's the Severance Podcast with Ben and Adam.
On Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And Pendergast with today's headlines
All right, let's get into today's headlines. Let's start with the Texans. They lose 27-19.
Oh.
I don't know if you know, Seth. They lost to the Chiefs.
I was trying to catch up during the break. I didn't get to the end yet.
Yeah, okay. Sorry. I spoiled it for you. They lost the game 27-19. Score could have been 42-0 for all I care. The big story out of this game is they lose Tank Dell, Jimmy Ward, Shaq Mason, all listed as out on the injury report for this week. The big thing we're waiting for with the Texans, I think maybe even more, for me at least, I don't know how other people feel, I'm waiting for this more than I am the results of the next two games. What is the prognosis for Tank Dell beyond just the dislocated kneecap?
Hopefully it's
about
just a dislocated kneecap.
I don't care if they're 11-6 or 9-8 if there's long-term damage to Tank
Dell. So with a dislocated kneecap, having seen a couple in person, it's a pretty grotesque injury, and it does freak you out. When you look at it, okay, the kneecap might be off on the side, but in your mind, all you're seeing is, like, his leg is turned the wrong way.
Yeah.
That's what it looks like.
Yep.
It's looking, but kind of like with a dislocated ankle, which is another grotesque injury, it's not always as bad as it looks.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, maybe hopefully it's as simple as that, but we have no idea. Did you say there was good news? I thought you said there was good news on your injury front. Oh, no, you were talking about...
No. I did say there's good. I'll get to that. Okay. I did say, but I'm just listening to the guys who
are out. I was waiting
to
hear what it was.
Well, okay. John Metchie and Cade Stover are listed as limited on the practice report. They missed the game last week.
I knew that. I thought maybe I missed the Shaq Mason report or something.
No. But we should talk
not
about that.
Shaq has been playing awesome, but...
No, and along those lines, so we've talked about Tank. We'll talk more about Tank in the 7 o'clock hour. That's a big story. Shaq Mason, Jimmy Ward, both out, and it sounds like are going to miss at least this game, obviously with a short turnaround. How do you think Kendrick Green did in Shaq's place?
Look, he had some rough snaps, but he also, the thing I like about him is that he's got a swarm mentality. There's a scrappiness to him.
He is a swarmer.
He's so undersized. I mean, at times he kind of gets batted around. but I admire that he's a guy that knows the battle is lost, but he'll fling his body into danger anyway. So it's not like he's a long-term solution or anything. But I'm not distraught over if he has to start, but it versus a team like the Ravens, it's got a really good run defense and very good interior defensive linemen. I don't think he's a solution. It's rough on the O-line right now.
What do they do if they get Juice Scruggs back? Juice Scruggs is empirically a better player than Kendrick Green.
Yeah.
More talented, at least. And they're at the stage now where I truly feel it's let's get our five best guys out there. Mm-hmm. I think that signal was sent when they moved Titus over to left guard and put Blake Fisher in. So if Juice comes back... The best five, right, would be, and Shaq's still out, I'm assuming.
I'm thinking, yeah, Juice at left guard and
Titus to right
back
guard.
To right tackle. Right guard.
To right guard. Yeah, you got to keep Blake Fisher in there right now.
Yeah.
That'd probably be it.
Yeah.
Jarrett Patterson stays at center. Losing Jimmy Ward is a killer. I mean, I don't know what you're down to here.
Because in the second half, okay, Kamari goes down and plays a slot. You got Okuda on the outside. Teams are going to start figuring out ways to
attack
that.
Yep. It's tough, man. You're down to it at a few positions here. The Astros shifting gears. Oh, by the way, the Texans play on Wednesday. You can hear the game on Sports Radio 610. 3:30 kick. 3:30 kick, 12:30 Texans countdown with me and Seth. Astros signed Christian Walker, 3 years, $60 million. For anybody who felt like the Astros were headed into a rebuild mode, this would certainly send the... This lines up with the message that Dana Brown has been giving us all season long, which is that they still believe that they're a contender in the American League. 3 years, $60 million for Christian Walker is a good sign. You know what? I know it's a good signing. Yankee fans were pissed about this.
Yeah, Yankees fans.
Yankee fans were like, Christian Walker, 3 years, $60 million? That's all it took?
Yeah.
That's all it took to get Christian Walker? Because I guess they've got
a first
base.
They call Christian Walker a greedy bastard taking money.
Not the one that I saw. Okay. Not the videos I saw. But this is good. Gold glove first baseman, 30 home run guy. And you cited this earlier. They seem to be targeting guys who, at least in the 81 games they play at Minute Maid Park, their swings are tailor-made for that part of the season, for the home games.
Yeah.
Christian Walker's one of those guys.
I pulled up the wrong depth chart for the Astros. I'm trying to remember what year this would have been from.
What is it?
Never mind. It's screwed up. Move the Crawford boxes in.
Even closer.
Have some bleachers in front there.
I think they are one... good outfield signing away from being a better team this coming season than they were last season.
Mm-hmm.
I think Paredes is a good third baseman. He was an all-star. Yeah. He was an all-star
I think
last year.
Yeah, look,
Walker's a major upgrade at first base.
The strategy of not signing guys to long-term deals, basically the one sentimental signing is already on the team that Altuve is going to be here. He'll be an Astro for life.
He can still
likely.
Play at least. Too.
Right. I feel like for the most part, I don't feel awesome because an entire outfield is not a minor issue, but the offense that they've potentially added and some stability at first base, especially to where, let's remember, it wasn't just Jose Abreu's production. It was just the entire first base situation was such a drain on the lineup, like how you had to construct the lineup, just how many innings were killed just because it was a non-compete out of your first baseman, whoever it was. And then defensively, it just, you know, it just was not good. So, yeah, I feel a lot better about this.
It can't be, though, that outfield is the new first base. You know what I mean? It can't be that your outfield for a majority of the games is some combination of Dubon, Myers, and Chaz McCormick. You got to make one more move, I think, to feel good that you've actually improved the baseball team this offseason. If you lose Kyle Tucker and Alex Bregman, and you feel like you go into next season feeling more optimism about the team, that's a good offseason for Dana Brown. And I think if they go get, you know, Teoscar Hernandez's name is getting thrown around, Santander from the Orioles,
mm-hmm.
his name's getting tossed about. We'll see. I don't know what Jim Crane's, I don't know where we're at relative to Jim Crane's threshold for spending in free agency.
I think the thing I have to keep reminding myself was that, hey, injuries are going to happen, but last year was freakishly bad for the pitchers. Yeah. And then just even Hunter Brown getting off to a slow start. Hunter didn't, but everybody else getting off to the slow start.
No, Hunter got off to Hunter did. Awful Hunter did.
Yes,
start.
Yes, yes, yes. His, that was an atrocious start.
Yeah. Rinel Blanco's who
Blanco's
you're
who I'm
of.
Thinking of. Yeah, yep. Blanco's the only guy that was steady.
He's good.
So that look, this is a team, and like with the signing of Wisniewski, yeah, it's... Like, with the Texans right now, all my hopes for them making any kind of a postseason run are, okay, they've got to play out of their minds on defense. If they're going to win this Ravens game, they got to turn the ball over 4 or 5 times. So, likewise with the Astros, you can't have the same pitching injuries you had last year. And then this goes back to being, on paper, a hell of a pitching rotation.
Well, they ain't trading Fromber, I can tell you that now. Christian Walker signing is a sign they're keeping Fromber.
The fact that I know they've had conversations, they'll listen to talks about anybody, but the way Dana Brown is operating, it feels very much like, yeah, we've got some issues, we've got some holes in the outfield, but... our pitching, we expect to carry this team for much of the season.
I think the Tucker thing was a unique situation in so much as you had a willing team in the Cubs that actually had guys that could help you win this year.
Yeah.
In Paredes and Wisniewski. So there's that. Christian Walker is an Astro. Real quick, Rockets win last night in Toronto. This was a game that they trailed big early in this game. Came back, a little back and forth in the second half. Rockets put a run on them at the end of the game to win 114-110. College football playoff, all blowouts in the first round. The spectacle of the college football playoff was fantastic with the home stadiums.
Yeah.
That was cool. The games were all blowouts. The closest game was Notre Dame-Indiana, 27-17. Indiana needed to score 2 touchdowns in the last 5 minutes just to make it look closer than it was. The games were all blowouts. The games were boring, but the spectacle was great. So we'll see.
If it were to go this,
the committee's getting killed right now.
How many years would it have to go like this before they made another change?
I think they're going to entertain serious changes this time around in terms of how they do the seeding and whatnot. I think this was viewed as sort of a petri dish kind of year for
the playoff. I mean, the situation Oregon is in now where it's like almost became a bad thing to be the one seed. They got to figure that out.
They got to figure it out. Yeah, I mean, it's an easy fix. It's just, will they do it this year? So we'll see. I think the whole thing of the 4 conference champions getting automatic buys, pushing teams like Boise State and ASU into the top 4, 2 teams that clearly aren't even close to the top 4, in my opinion, that's the issue. So we'll talk about that a little more as the week rolls on. Games are on New Year's Eve and New Year's Day, the quarterfinals, all played in bowl games. So that was fun. College football playoff action this past weekend. Oh, by the way, Ricky Henderson passing away.
Yeah,
we'll acknowledge Ricky Henderson and acknowledge me at 7:20 today. Let's circle back to the Texans and the Chiefs, and let's relive some of what happened on Saturday. This will help us maybe diagnose some of the things that are wrong with this team right now and some of the things that are right with this team right now. We'll do it through the voice of Mark Vandermeer. We'll do it through the plays that happened and mattered on Saturday. That's coming up next.
It's a Shoppers John Deere Reaction Monday on Sports Radio 610. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
Third down at 12 from the Houston 43-yard line. Stroud, shotgun, one back. Dare. CJ calls for the ball. Drops back, looking, firing over the middle, and intercepted at the 32-yard line and brought down at the 34-yard line. It's Jaden Hicks, the rookie, picking off CJ Stroud, trying to thread the needle over the middle.
All right, that was Mark Vandermeer on the call. We're going to take a look back at some of the crucial junctures in Saturday's loss to the Chiefs. I would say a loss that, generally speaking, every Texan I heard from felt good about the way they competed in that game, which to me is, it rings a little hollow, just because if someone had told me before the season that the quotes after the game would be like, hey, you know, we feel like we stood in against a good team.
Yeah.
Beginning of the year, I felt like this is one of the good teams. And I don't feel like the Texans are a bad team at all. They're 9-6. They're not on that same tier with the teams that are going to be favored to get to the Super Bowl out of the AFC. But it's just, it is a, Seth, it is a stark realization that they're probably a year behind, at least, where everybody thought they were at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, I think, honestly, in terms of look at the guys that Patrick Mahomes is getting the ball to. I mean, they've got three running backs on that team right now, any one of which I would love to have as a backup running back.
Yes.
And as of right now, the Texans really don't have a backup running back. Oh. Not one that they... Ogumbo Wale is your best passing option and pass blocker, but they don't like him as a runner. Pierce got a carry. Well, like 4 or 5 yards, right?
Yeah.
So let's say he's up to, what, 15, 16 carries
16
on the season?
16 carries now, man.
Yeah, so...
He's going to get to 20 before you know it.
The fourth quarter operation, it's just it's night and day. Even looking at the box score and the team stats, you look and you see, man, if all you looked at was number of first downs, total yardage, the yards per play, all of that, Chiefs are only a little bit better in most categories, and yet it's in the fourth quarter when it really, really matters. And the Texans just, they were first and goal on the 10, and it turns into a third and 10. Third and 20, excuse. Yeah. Excuse me. Third and goal from the 20. And because of mistakes and miscues. And you can't block. Your tight ends are atrocious blocking. It's a mess.
In the last 11 minutes and 51 seconds of the game, the Chiefs possessed the football for 10 minutes and 14 seconds. Yeah. You had the ball for a minute and a half on a three-play, negative 13-yard drive that ended in a sack.
Right.
You know, and the Chiefs had it 14 plays, 60 yards, kick a field goal, burn 6.5 minutes in doing so.
Mm-hmm.
And then they get... Did anybody think the Texans were getting the ball back when the Chiefs got the ball with 3 minutes, 41 seconds left? Mm-hmm. I didn't. I knew the Chiefs would just
Unless
go...
Unless Mahomes would score real quickly or something.
Right. Well, yeah, when they hit P. Ryan on that route down the sideline, I'm going, oh, maybe we'll get the ball back here.
With Pat Mahomes, I do think that there is something that's just a little bit different with him this year. I think some of those, he had some errant throws that could have been, in the past, you would have thought, oh, it would have been money. But even just with Travis Kelce, right, Travis Kelce's not nearly the same guy. Every time, he goes down at any contact whatsoever.
Yeah, yeah.
There's no broken tackles or anything.
Yep.
But Mahomes is finding him for first downs. It's just a better overall operation. So for anybody who was wondering whether Andy Reid or Bobby Slowick was the better offensive coordinator, I think Andy Reid still got the mantle, okay?
If you were somebody still wondering this,
there are a lot of people out there wondering. This is the
had.
Game. That was my big...
Yeah. Let's dig into some of the plays from this game. I was told Patrick Mahomes had a bum ankle. I don't know. I was told he had a bum ankle. Didn't stop him from doing this.
Second down and 8 at the 15-yard line of Houston. With three receivers wide side left, Mahomes in the gun, one back, Hunt. Mahomes calls for the ball. Four-man rush. Mahomes stepping up. Mahomes stepping out. Almost tripped up, but he takes it across the 10 himself. 5 and into the end zone. Patrick Mahomes, touchdown run. 15 yards. That ankle is fine. And the Texans surrender a touchdown in the opening possession of the Chiefs.
Well, to let you know the ankle is fine, Mark, there was a defensive lineman, and I don't have a number, it may have been Tim Settle, that actually kind of reached out and swiped the ankle.
Good. Yep. We're good.
By the way, yeah, because Chiefs fans had picked up on Settle's comment before the game.
Oh, yeah.
That, you know, we'd basically said we're going to attack his ankle. And they were trying real hard to let Tim Settle know about it on social media.
I'm sure.
Okay, so this is the thing. Mahomes, I mean, he totally does have a sprained ankle. It's just that he's so dramatic about it. People think he's faking it. There's not any part of me that thinks he's faking it. He's just he lets everybody know that his ankle is sprained. That's the annoying part. But I don't think that wasn't a surprise to anybody that he was able to do that. He's done it multiple times before. He's had in the Super Bowl versus the Eagles. He had a really long run after spraining his ankle in the first half. He does this every year. So. It's not like that caught the Texans by surprise. They just didn't do a good enough job of corralling him and coming up and realizing when he's pulling the ball down.
Yeah. And the part that you heard there, Andre describing the Tim Settle thing, like it was one of those things, again, with Mahomes, that you get hands on him in the pocket, but it doesn't even matter. He doesn't look that strong.
Yeah,
like,
he looks right.
Not gangly, but he's
got kind of an odd body type. Because you don't realize
he's actually.
Not one where
you go, this guy's a beast.
Right, but he's a big dude. You know, and he is strong. He's got really good core strength. He's got big lower legs, and he's able to do this stuff routinely.
Yep.
And then, you know, where that pays off, how they offset that, too, is later in the game when Kamari Lassiter, we'll play it at some point.
Yeah.
Yeah, never mind.
We'll keep it moving. Yeah. We'll get to that one. So Mahomes scores a touchdown there. Texans actually took a lead in this game, though.
And he'd had that big run on that same series before that also.
Mahomes did?
Yeah.
So the Chiefs took a 7-0 lead. Texans get a field goal, make it 7-3. And then the Texans would get a touchdown, actually, to make this thing 10-7. This was a play where CJ's throwing it back across his body. I'm like, oh, God, please fall incomplete. The way he was throwing it, it didn't. It was completed. Touchdown.
First and goal from the 10. CJ escaping to the right side after taking the snap. Throws downfield and caught! Touchdown, Houston! Dalton Schultz, CJ Stroud rolling right, finding the tight end for 6.
What?
As the Texans go in front of Kansas City.
I was hoping badly that ball would find a pair of friendly hands because it stayed in the air forever. Rolling right, throwing back to the middle of the field is a no-no.
Yeah, I was like, where's this going? And then there's Dalton Schultz standing all by himself. Now, he might have pushed off a little bit to get so open.
I was trying to watch it with an objective eye. And I think there was just kind of wrestling and hand fighting going on.
Yeah.
I think that
was fine.
That's usually a non-call in that situation.
Yep.
He kind of took him. They were hand fighting, and then he ended up just kind of doing the old Michael Jordan swipe of the shin, but he did it to the upper body. So
Chiefs fans did not like it, though.
Well,
they were booing and booing.
They also, on the
irony,
broadcast,
my name is Chiefs.
Yeah. Blake Fisher had a nice little micro hold that he got away with, which was, I'll credit Blake Fisher with that. Like, that's kind of a veteran move. You get enough of a little tug and let go, and as a defensive lineman, I think it should be called a hold, right, but they get away with it all
the time. I was nervous that it was going to get called a hold.
Yeah.
I know exactly what you were talking about. Chiefs would go on to score a touchdown. Kareem Hunt to go up 14-10. Texans would get the ball back with a chance. This early on looked like it was turning into a bit of a shootout back and forth. Texans get the ball back with about 4.5 minutes to go in the second quarter. We know their desire there would be go on a nice long drive that keeps the ball away from the Chiefs there, especially because the Chiefs get the ball to start the second half of this game. So they did take it down inside the 2-minute warning that the Texans did. Unfortunately, 1st and 10, Kansas City 30, a weird phantom OPI call, offensive pass interference call on Tank Dell.
Yeah.
I don't know. They isolated Tank Dell, and I'm looking, I'm going, where is this offensive pass interference? It was a significant penalty because it pushed the Texans out of field goal range, so it made it 1st and 20 at the Kansas City 40. CJ throws a couple of incomplete passes, and then after a timeout on 3rd and 20 at the Kansas City 40, this happens.
Here's the snap. Instant pressure. CJ over the middle. It's picked off at the 35-yard line. Couldn't get anything on the football, and McDuffie picks it off, and the Chiefs have it with 50 seconds left in the half. Man. The second interception of the day for Stroud.
I think CJ was just trying to throw it into the dirt. And I don't know that he was trying to complete a pass there.
He was getting hit. He could have thrown. Yeah, I mean, he was under pressure as he did it. It would have been.
I'm not absolving him of anything.
It would have been a 57-yard field goal at that point.
Right.
So an extra 5 yards would have been nice.
Yeah.
But you were already in field goal range, so just don't make that. That's on CJ.
Yeah, it's on CJ.
I mean, it's on the pass protection too, but it's on CJ. Ultimately.
Yeah. And the worst part about that is you give the ball to Mahomes at the 40-yard line or whatever. You know it. In plenty of time to go get three more points, which is what they did.
Yeah.
All right. So the second half underway, and the Texans force a punt. The Chiefs, 5 plays, 11 yards. The Chiefs' first drive. So they force a punt. So the Chiefs getting the ball to start the second half doesn't hurt you. Now you get the ball with your first possession of the second half. The Texans score a touchdown, and I'm guessing it is a touchdown they would have rather not scored.
CJ fakes the give, boots out to the right, there's pressure, steps back, now fires to the end zone, and caught, Tank Dell, touchdown Houston! Stroud to Dell, they score and can tie the game with the extra point, and Dell is slow to get up. He hung on to the ball, but man, he's hurting, and he and Jared Wayne, who's up today, collided.
All right, so that, I mean, we don't need any more description on this one. We know the outcome of this play. I'd gladly they remain down 17-10 in this game.
Yeah.
I'd gladly they lose 42-0 in this game if they still had Tank Dell out there. That was a tough one to watch, the whole scene, man. Not just the injury itself, but the reaction to it. Both teams, you know, the Chiefs were gathered around there too. So that's going to be one of the most damaging plays of the season, ironically, on a play in which Tank was able to hold on to the football.
Yeah, he was able to hold on to the ball. I mean, it was good play design. You had enough of the safety bit up on the play action, and he lets Tank run by him. They were in single high safety right there. So it was just a matter of CJ waiting for everything to clear and then him making the throw. It was a great play. It was that was still at the point in the game where I'm thinking, okay, they're actually doing some of the stuff we want to see out of them. They had some Tank Dell on some short stuff, you know, to try to get the quick game going, setting up deep balls, and then that was it.
I don't know that D'Amico's done 2 press conferences since the end of that game, and I don't know that anybody's asked. My first thought, and this is not me, I'm not throwing shade at Jared Wayne or anything like that. But I do wonder, that's 2 guys that are awfully close to each other.
No, they asked him about it yesterday.
Oh, did they? Okay.
D'Amico didn't really give an answer.
Yeah, okay. Just, so that's
he talked about Jared Wayne's emotional health.
Gotcha.
More so than anything else.
Gotcha. So it got asked. It just we don't have clarity on that.
Yeah. Why was Wayne in that? Yeah.
All right. So the Texans lose Tank Dell on that play. Kyahne Fairbairn misses an extra point. So it starts to feel like one of those things. It's piling on here, you know, like, okay, they didn't even tie the game. You lose Tank Dell, you'd at least like to come out 17-17. Kaimi misses an extra point. They give up a long kick return to near midfield. But then the defense comes up big. They make a big stop on fourth down in midfield.
Mahomes hands off to Pacheco, and Pacheco,
not
Pacheco, stopped! He's not going to get there. Mario Edwards makes the stop as the Texans turn the Chiefs over on downs. Big play with 9:51 to go in the third. Texans down a point with the Rock in Kansas City territory.
Cool to see. Cool to see the defense come up big.
And especially in that moment where you're wondering, okay, look, it looked like it was kind of weird emotionally there for a lot of these guys after the Tank Dell injury, and the defense came out and played like they tend to do. I think those guys are it's a mentally tough bunch. It's not a perfect defense. They had some issues against the run, but in that moment, they stopped them on 3rd and 1 and 4th and 1.
3rd and 1 and 4th and 1.
I mean, that was a big moment to come back and maybe get back into it.
Yep. Huge, huge stop there. So what do the Texans do? Well, they get the ball back, 1st and 10 at midfield. They run Joe Mixon for a couple yards. Then Bobby says, you know what we need to do here? We need to run one of those screens to the wide receiver. That's what we need to do. On 2nd and 8, he runs a screen to Nico Collins. I'll let you guess how it went. -1 yards. That was their longest gain of the day on a screen pass to the wide receivers was -1 yards, was their longest gain of the day, -1. So 3rd and 9, incomplete. And 3rd and 9, and then Dalton Schultz drops the ball on 3rd and 9.
By the way, and I know some people thought that might have been an RPO where CJ made the wrong decision. I do not think that was an actual RPO. I think that was predetermined they were going to throw there.
Dalton drops a ball on 3rd and 9. So, you know, the defense came up big. Everybody else seemed to be in a real funk. And then the defense didn't come up big. Chiefs get the ball back, 10 plays, 80 yards. They score a touchdown. We'll hear from Xavier Worthy momentarily and acknowledge me about that touchdown. But that put the Chiefs ahead 24-16. Texans would muster a field goal to make it 24-19. And then 11 minutes, 41 seconds, or 51 seconds to go in the game, the Chiefs get the ball back. They burn 6.5 minutes off the clock. 14 plays to kick a field goal to go back up 8.
Yeah.
Texans would go then. After the Chiefs went up 24-16, on the field goal drive was when CJ was doing some things that I'm like, okay, maybe he's in a bit of a fun. He had a couple delay of game penalties, and he had this play right here, which was very strange.
Three receivers to the left now. Schultz motions to the right. Stroud under center. First and goal at the 10. Mix into the backfield. CJ fakes the give. He's got a lot of time. He's looking. Scrambles to the right. Stroud eyes downfield, and he's going to run out of bounds for a loss. Yeah. CJ, you got to throw the football.
Yeah, he ran out of bounds. Good enough. He ran out of bounds for a 5-yard loss right there on first and 10.
Yeah.
So, that you know, CJ often gets put in second and third and long by, I think, other people not doing their jobs. That was CJ with just a brain fart.
And then they have a delay of game to knock it back 5 more yards.
Yes.
And so it was really a haphazard operation from the quarterback and the offensive coordinator there, depending on why there was the delay of game. It was exactly the opposite of the type of stuff the Chiefs do that have led them to having the record they do.
Yep, no doubt. So they kick a field goal, 24-19, and then
the other was the sack, the corner blitz sack? Was that on that same sequence?
That was the last time they had the football. That was the only other sack.
Right,
yeah,
right.
They went 3 and out for -13 yards. So that was the last possession the Texans would have.
That's floating around on social media because Orlovsky broke that down and talked about how, hey, this is a corner blitz. Quarterback's got to change protection there. It gets interesting because, like, usually the QB is responsible for changing the pass protection. The center is going to be responsible for the calls in the run game. With CJ, there's times where he'll change the pass protection. There's times where he won't. It wasn't on the offensive line there. They were doing a slide right. So that cornerback is going to be unblocked. The part that's concerning to me was that it did not look to me like CJ was aware of the threat of the cornerback blitz.
Right.
Because he was, I mean, he had his eye, like, Dalton Schultz wasn't going to be a hot route on that play, if that's what it was going to be. And he didn't, it looked like it caught him by surprise.
Yeah.
Part of it, too, is that, hey, they've got Schultz tight in on the formation like they tend to do, and it's a lot easier to blitz from that spot, too. So it's on CJ, it's on the entire offense, the way it's designed and the way it's been executed. That play right there is just an indication of how far behind the Texans are offensively.
Yes, yes, well put. Last one here, the highlights, as we relive the game through the voice of Mark Vandermeer. There's always a play in a game like this. It's a one-score game when the other team has the ball. There's always that play where you go, okay, the realization that the game is over. It's probably over. For me, 3rd and 4, Kansas City 45-yard line, 3.5 minutes to go in the game. Here you go.
3rd and 4 from the Kansas City 45. Mahomes out of the gun, throws underneath, and got a man wide open across the 50, 45, and tripped up at the 39-yard line by Bullock. It's Samaje Perine. He's done big damage in this game through the air. First down at the 39, clock moving, 3:15 to go. Texans can't stop it.
That's as Chiefs as it gets, man. Just journeyman running back, sneaking out of the backfield.
Yeah.
On 3rd and 4, you know, this is one of those times, like, defense, we need you here.
Mm-hmm.
3rd and 4 at midfield, you get the ball back. Kansas City, you know, 3rd and 4, you get the ball back. They're probably punting, pinning you deep. You know, you've got the 2-minute warning. I think they burned all their timeouts the Texans had at that point. But you'd have had a good 3 minutes or so to try to put together a drive and a 2-point conversion. And the Chiefs, they don't allow it.
Mm-hmm.
This is how you win 16 consecutive one-score games.
Yeah, and honestly, the way the Chiefs have played this year, even though it was close down to the end, this is a much better margin of victory for the Chiefs
8
than they typically do.
Yeah.
It's still technically a one score game,
that
I guess,
counts,
but
yeah.
It's like that. Even the scoreboard, you look at the Chiefs' overall record and you think, oh, of course, they're probably beating a lot of teams like that. No, they haven't scored more than 30 points in a game yet this year.
Yeah, the compliment I'll pay the Texans is this did play like a one score game.
Yeah, yeah,
you know, like this was not like the Jets game. was technically a one-score game. The Texans lost 21-13, but they got run off the field in the second half of that
right.
game.
The putting themselves in position to score, getting up to the 10-yard line, it's first and goal at the 10.
Yeah.
Right. They're not laying down and dying.
Right.
But then right there, like that feeling of being so close yet so far when it comes to where these two teams are,
yes.
It's just that's where the Texans are not that team yet. They can take advantage of even the good things they've done.
The Chiefs were not perfect in this game by any means.
Right.
But when they make mistakes, it's Mahomes sailing a ball on first and 10.
Mm.
You give yourself plenty of outs to live to fight another day. The Texans make these mistakes, and it's you're going backwards.
Yeah.
The Chiefs' mistakes, you're kind of stagnant and you can recover from it. It's not a big deal. It's a throwaway down in the middle of the second quarter. The Texans make mistakes like CJ running out of bounds in Kansas City territory for 5 yards.
You know that, and that's where again, if Bobby Slowick were to make a case for him keeping his job, I think it happened the other day when Landry was asking about the bye week improvements that they may have made, and Landry asked, so, you know, upon reflecting on what you guys have done well, what are they? And Bobby's only answer was explosive plays. And I'm like, right, but that's not, like, you can't win. That's like having a diet of cocaine, you know? It works great for a little while,
yeah, well, yeah.
But then everything falls apart, I've found.
Relying on lotto tickets for your 401k.
Yeah, like whatever, like what's the most winnable lottery ticket? One of those, like something that you can win one out of six times or something.
Yeah.
So like, oh, every sixth time you're like, oh, hey, look at this. Things are going all right, aren't they? And then you lose it all on your next five lottery attempts.
What's your job? I'm a professional scratcher offer. Yeah. I just scratch offs all day long.
That's his second job. He's one of those people that takes surveys online. That's my...
yeah.
Some dude's always trying to sell me on filling out surveys online for money, and I feel like that might be a better career strategy.
Maybe
for Bobby.
All right, let's get to acknowledge me. Let's acknowledge some of the big performances from the weekend. CJ Stroud, I think in the emotional state he was in after the game, was not ready to acknowledge the Tank Dell TD reception, in so much as Tank holding on to the football while having a catastrophic knee injury, and understandably so. CJ was more worried about Tank and his health than just scoring 6 points in that game. But I'm going to acknowledge Tank for holding on to the football.
Acknowledge me!
That's one tough SOB, man.
Yeah, yeah, that was, I think in the kind of emotional severity of the moment, you're not thinking about stuff like that. But it's worth pointing out that I don't think most people would have held on to the ball in that situation.
Dude, like, he's holding his knee with one hand and the ball with the other.
Nobody's ever going to accuse Tank Dell of not trying or fighting hard enough.
That's it,
like,
man.
Tank's got a swarm mentality. He's got limitations by being so tiny with that swarm mentality, but he's one of the few players on offense where you're like, oh, yeah, that guy's swarm.
Yep.
Nico's swarm.
Yep. So we're waiting. We're awaiting news on Tank, you know, more news on Tank. So we know it's a dislocated kneecap. He's back in Houston. They're taking a further look at it, and I would just say keep it tuned to Sports Radio 610 all day long for your update on Tank Dell. All right, we've been waiting to get to this one. Xavier Worthy.
Yeah, we originally
Xavier Worthy.
Acknowledge
Thank
me.
You. He caught the touchdown that put the Chiefs up 24-16 in this game. Deep in Texans territory. Kamari Lassiter lined up across from Xavier Worthy, but the Texans, as it turned out, were in a zone. And Xavier Worthy, rookie wide receiver, did a really smart thing. Just ran to an empty space, which you can do with Patrick Mahomes. Travis Kelce does it 10 times a game. Just runs to an open area and Mahomes finds him. Xavier Worthy led the Chiefs in receiving in this game. 7 catches, 65 yards, and a touchdown. Xavier Worthy was asked after the game, how did you know that they were in zone?
Yeah, we originally were calling that play for man, but they ended up going zone. So I just try to kind of get a feel for like what they were going to do in the zone. And I just seen like an open area and just try to rush to it.
When did you recognize what's going to be?
When they yelled out, zone it, zone it.
Okay, Seth, my question to you, the former player, is that a normal thing for guys to just scream out, zone it?
No, it's not abnormal. I mean, it's just sometimes you get into a position if you got to sort it out. Like by alignment, I think he probably would have figured that was zone. Mm-hmm. The cornerback is 7 yards off the ball. The safety's in the end zone, so he might have read that normally anyway. So it wasn't like they were trying to. It wasn't like they were trying to line up and make it look like it was man, but then they're gonna fool him and drop out. So I'm not. Yeah, whenever this stuff, people love...
You know how that plays on Twitter.
I know. Whenever, I'm not worried about D'Amico's defense being predictable. I'll tell you one thing, honestly. I was looking at some of the tendencies of different defenses around the league. D'Amico's defense is very diverse in the numbers of coverages they play, what they blitz out of, all of these different things. There's not really... You can't, they run quarters coverage the most, but it's only, it's 20% of the time. I'm not worried about that.
Yeah.
That's normal stuff that happens.
All right. The internet. I'm acknowledging the internet because the internet can be a horrible place, but it can also come up with some amazing things as well. Twitter, there was a video making the rounds on Twitter. I think it was Carl Sheffers who was reffing the Texans game on Saturday, pretty sure. Whoever it was, this refereeing crew in the second quarter seemed like they had a bet on the Chiefs. Between all the bad calls that Texan fans were complaining about, Seth, all happened within about a 10-minute period in the game.
Yeah,
Derek Stingley, defensive holding call that nullified a sack. The Tank Dell phantom OPI. Tank Dell getting dragged down in the end zone on a deep ball, which maybe should have been a pass interference. The fumble that got overturned. But it didn't even matter. The Patrick Mahomes throw fumble that got overturned to an incomplete pass, but didn't even matter because the Texans got called for a 15-yard grazing Patrick Mahomes helmet with a hand penalty.
Yeah.
So there were a lot of things that happened in the second quarter, which led to this funny video generated, I'm sure, by AI that had the referee in the Chiefs game saying this.
During the play, personal foul, violating Patrick Mahomes' personal bubble. The result of the play is first down, touchdown, and Chiefs win by 50 points. Hail Patrick Mahomes.
Did you say hail Patrick Mahomes?
Yes. That was really funny. I'm not a ref blamer normally, but boy, that second quarter tested my mettle.
Oh my gosh. You know what I realized after this game was that there are legions of Chiefs fans who I think seek out anybody questioning whether or not... Well, now you were just flat out... You were online basically just saying, oh yeah, the officials are helping the Chiefs. So that's going to get attention. I noticed it just because in my YouTube video, I kind of just made a couple of jokes about it. And oh my gosh, I should be ashamed of myself, apparently. I'm one of the worst people who ever lived and even with Pat Mahomes' ankle, I kind of joked about, this is what he does. Yeah, they were accusing me of accusing him of faking it. They're vicious. They're very angry.
The one that drew the most hate from Chiefs, and it's always, by the way, when it's opposing fans, like in this case, Chiefs fans, it's always, when it's on Twitter, always people whose names are at Goat Mahomes with a picture of Mahomes or somebody on the Chiefs in their bio, that kind of thing. Those are the people that get most upset. The thing that I retweeted the throw fumble play.
Yeah.
And I said, well, yeah, there's fumbles and then there's Patrick Mahomes fumbles. And boy, they came after me. And the big line that you get from these people, if you get this line from them, you know you're getting some sort of sycophant from the other team.
Yeah.
You don't know ball.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
You don't
that's
know ball.
Yeah.
Do you know ball? You don't know ball, man. Yeah, that's my favorite.
I honestly, that one, I was going to be surprised if they ruled that a fumble. I mean, he had enough. It was forward, and it's not. If it were clear, if he had clearly lost control when the forward motion started, I think it was more that he had lost control, but it was also kind of simultaneous with as the forward motion had already started.
It was close.
Was that reversed or upheld?
It was reversed. It was reversed to incomplete. It was originally a fumble, but it didn't matter because of the 15-yard penalty.
The weird one was the fact that the review on the one incompletion in the end zone. It took so long.
Yeah.
Where his foot was clearly out of bounds.
Oh, I know.
Derek Stingley had, there was no...
Yeah, Worthy's foot is 8 inches onto the white.
Even Blackledge was trying to make a case for it. What are you talking about?
I'm like, what are these announcers watching? This should have been overturned a minute and a half ago. What are they doing?
They're dissecting little parts of the play where it didn't matter. He was never close to having the other foot in. Why is this review taking so long?
I agree with you. Aziz Alshire.
Acknowledge.
Why are we acknowledging him? He wasn't even playing in this game. I know. You know what he did? He showed up at a Texans watch party. Houston Stressons had a Texans watch party for this game. I forget where it was. But Aziz Alshire showed up at the watch party and was taking pictures of people and hanging out.
And I DM'd Houston Stressons and said, wow, that's awesome that he did that. And I don't know. Houston Stressons said he just showed up.
Yeah.
It wasn't. He didn't. He wasn't invited or anything. He just showed up.
Yeah.
I hope they waived his entrance fee. Whatever it might have been.
You think he bought a round? Aziz Alshire?
I don't know. I hope that he had rounds bought for him.
Yeah. I bet he bought around. He seems like someone who would do something like that. Yeah. I think PR-wise, it would have been a good idea to do something like
Houston
that.
Stressen's there, at Texans commenter. Yeah. He's the one that has the Free Aziz t-shirt.
Yes.
So they've probably, you know, been in communication
Gave
about
me
that.
A few. My wife wore one to the game against the Dolphins. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It would be nice to have Aziz Alshire versus the Ravens.
Sure would. He won't be there. He's suspended for one more game. He'll be back for the Titans. Ricky Henderson. I want to make sure we get this one in.
Acknowledge me.
Best leadoff hitter of all time. Passed away over the weekend at the age of 65. Now, Ricky Henderson played for so long, it felt like he was 65 in the waning years of his career.
Yeah.
And yet he was still stealing bases on the regular in his early 40s.
You know, and I think that's a young enough age these days that when somebody, like, he'd kept himself in shape and everything, it was a little bit out of nowhere. But it was cool to watch a lot of the old. You talk about colorful characters.
Yes.
Man, if he had lived in social media, the days of social media. The one that I stumbled across was him telling the story about how when he got his first $1 million paycheck, he did not deposit it. He put it, he framed it and put it up on the wall for a year.
To show everybody he's a millionaire.
The A's had to tell him, they had to ask him, like, hey, what's going on with this? Yeah.
They're accounting. I know the interview you're talking about. The best part about it was with Mike Greenberg and Mike Golic.
That's right, yeah.
And Greenberg leans in and says, you're only a millionaire if you deposit the check your bank account.
Accounts payable. Yeah. It's in a gray area there.
Okay.
Receivable.
On the ledger,
receivable.
It's technically an asset.
Although usually those checks are only good for like 3 months, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, the A's being the same. Now, a later version of the A's might have been like, okay, well, hey, your loss.
Yeah.
We're not giving you that money. You had your chance.
There's 1,000 more ivory back scratchers I can go buy. Yes.
But it was cool. It was cool. It was kind of like, I always worry about young athletes and, you know, hopefully they're saving some of their money. I just like the fact that a young Ricky Henderson, who I'm assuming most people probably would have assumed because of his public persona that he would have been out and spending all that money immediately. Like, no, he was living frugally enough that he had that $1 million
on the wall, check.
And he didn't bat an eyelash. Now, it's still very poor money management.
Yeah.
You gotta remember, that was back in the day when interest rates were very high.
Yes.
He could have just been earning money in a money market account on that thing.
Yep.
He cared more about baseball than the material thing.
He did. Ricky Henderson, all-time steals leader. 468 more steals than the next closest guy, Lou Brock, whose record he broke. 1,406 steals. For some context, the active steals leader right now, Starling Marte with 354.
Wow.
He's over 1,100 behind. Now the game's changed. You know, stolen bases are trying to get the stolen base back in the game. Ricky Henderson led the American League in steals every year from 1980 to 1989, except for one season where he only played 95 games in 1987. Harold Reynolds led the league in steals that year with 60. Apparently, Ricky called him after the season was over to congratulate him.
Oh, really?
Yeah. 81 leadoff home runs, by far the most in Major League history. The most unintentional walks of all time. You can't talk about most walks of all time because Barry Bonds has completely skewed it because he's got like 700 intentional walks. But the fact that Ricky Henderson was such a good base stealer, and obviously the leader all time in runs as well, runs scored, that he was that good a base stealer with that good an eye.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the last thing you want to do is put Ricky Henderson on base, and that dude got on base due to unintentional walks more than anybody in the history of the game.
And you think about in that era, too, where small ball was so much bigger a deal as well. He's a great, great player. So
ultimate RIP, weapon, man. AL MVP in 1990. My favorite Ricky Henderson story, Seth, I think it was told on the Jim Rome show by somebody. Might have been John Olerud. John Olerud's part of this story. John Olerud, the former first baseman with the Blue Jays and the Mets, who was probably best known for wearing a helmet in the field when he was playing first base. Not with the ear flaps and everything, but just like one of those helmets like the catcher wear backwards sometimes. Yeah. It's just the brim. Looks like a ball cap, but it's plastic. And Ricky was on the team with Olerud at the time, and he was a teammate of his in Toronto. Several years later, they were on the same team again. I forget where it was. Might have been in Boston. I don't remember where it was. Several years later. And Olerud is getting ready to go out and play first base. The two of them are just chopping it up. And he's getting ready to go out and play first base. And he puts the helmet on to go out there. And Ricky's like, oh, man, you wear a helmet in the field? I had a teammate in Toronto that used to do that. And Olerud's like, yeah, that was me, Ricky. I love that. It's a great story.
Olerud had had, if I remember correctly, he's like a bad accident in college.
Something.
He had like an aneurysm or something.
Brain aneurysm.
Like that.
Yeah,
it wasn't a concussion or anything.
No.
Or I mean, it probably involved it, but it wasn't. It's, yeah.
Yeah, so he wore a helmet in the field his whole career.
That takes a big amount of confidence to get over that, probably, at first.
Wearing a helmet in the field?
I mean, obviously, he's got a good reason for it.
Yeah, once you explain it.
Back in that day, especially.
Oh, yeah.
When they're, you know,
all about the looks back in the 80s.
If you ain't
and 90s,
drinking
man.
Whiskey and not caring about brain health, you're not it, a big man. Leaguer, man.
That's it. That's it. All right, that's acknowledge me. We acknowledge the big performances from over the weekend. Are the Texans the worst of the division champs or potential division champs this year? One particular national pundit says, indeed they are. We'll hash it out. Where do the Texans stand among these division champions or soon-to-be division champions coming up for the postseason?
Oh, well, it's a crazy time of year.
Next. It's a Shoppers John Deere Reaction Monday on Sports Radio 610. Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, here's Payne and Pendergast.
It's interesting. I think the Texans, you know, D'Amico Ryans and C.J. Stroud talked after the game about how they seemed to feel good about the way they competed in that game against the Chiefs on Saturday. And it was a one-score game that played like a one-score game. The Chiefs were the better team. I think that was clear, but the Texans were able to compete at times, and if they could have avoided some big mistakes and screen passes to the wide receivers, this might have been a different outcome. Who knows? Or at least a little closer outcome. Not sure it's inspiring a lot of confidence about the Texans and what they might be able to do long-term. This was Rex Ryan yesterday on the NFL Countdown show on ESPN, and he is not confident in the Texans' prospects for this coming postseason.
The Texans struggling again as they seem to against the top competition.
They really do, Granny, and it starts with protection. And this kid, I mean, he looks like a different quarterback completely. Why? He's not getting protected. He's not confident in the pocket, and I think that's the biggest difference this year. Quite honestly, they look like the worst division champion in this league. If they're fortunate to play in the division they do, but they look like one and done. If you can't protect the quarterback better than this, now all of a sudden you, and by the way, a ton of penalties, all that type of stuff, and now you're going to lose Dell, unfortunately, for the season. It's a bad look. Yeah,
okay, worst division champ. Now, they are clearly, I think, Seth, a cut below the other division champs in the AFC.
The AFC, right. But you go to the NFC West, for instance, and what are the Rams right now?
Seattle's right there, too.
The Falcons, are division leader right now.
Right, the Falcons just replaced their quarterback.
Right. So I get what he's saying there, but I think in terms of, I think with the Texans, amongst us as a fan base, but then also nationally, it's the fall from grace based on preseason expectations.
Yes.
Where I had multiple people this weekend saying, Seth, why don't you just come out and say they suck? Well, because there's strata here. They're mediocre.
Yeah.
They're a 500 football team. They operate as they have from the very beginning of the year when they got off to a good start on the win-loss record. They were still operating like a 500 football team.
Yes.
So they don't suck. They're just not nearly in the same conversation as the better teams in the league.
Yeah, I think it frames the disappointment that a lot of people have, the Rex Ryan thing, because instead of, at the beginning of the year, the argument was, are the Texans among the best teams in football?
Yeah.
And on paper, you could make an argument, you know, without knowing how the Diggs and Hunter and Mixon and all the other acquisitions, how they were going to play out. The funny thing is the new acquisitions have largely played out really, really well for the Texans, except for availability, but they've played well. We didn't think we would be in an argument here at the end of the season for not being the worst division leader. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like it's. I think that you know what I'm saying? Like, like going into the season, like you're arguing, are you there? Are you the team that can dethrone the Chiefs?
Yeah.
The Texans, if I had a dime for every segment that I saw about that, either on social media or on television, I would have had a lot of dimes. Now the argument, and I'm not even saying it's an invalid argument. Like I disagree with Rex Ryan, but it's not an invalid argument. It's an argument you can debate a little bit, but that's the frustrating part is we're sitting here going, they're not the worst division winner. And
you're getting
you're
into an argument you don't want to be in.
This is
like the most depressing argument. Hey, the Falcons are in rough shape.
And to your point about expectations, last year we would have killed to have been in that argument going into the season.
Warren Buffett calls it the 99th floor syndrome, which is like, okay, if you're the CEO of a company, you're on the 100th floor, the top floor of a 100-story building, and you're like, hey, you're riding high. If you get bucked down to the 99th floor, that feels a lot worse than back when you were working in the mailroom and you got your first promotion and everything.
Man.
Like, psychologically, it's a demotion.
Yep.
And demotions suck. And that's what it's been. It's been It feels like the entire season has been a great, like they're, every week they're coming in and they're ripping your sergeant patch off your uniform.
One more patch.
Yeah, you're getting bucked down to private, kid.
We're getting a lot of texts from people about, and I saw a lot of this on social media this week too, because the Garrett Wilson fueling of the fire, I'll call it. You know, there's a lot of tea leaves with Garrett Wilson here. Garrett Wilson, the wide receiver for the Jets, who was offensive rookie of the year back in 2022, who, if we remember back to week 9, was stupendous against the Houston Texans, had two of the more spectacular touchdown catches you're going to see, the one-hander over the middle in front of or behind Jalen Petrie, and then the catch over Kamari Lassiter in the back of the end zone where he got his shin down in the back. Garrett Wilson's a really good player who is incredibly frustrated right now with the Jets. There was a quote, there's a quote from him rolling around the internet this weekend where he was asked about why he didn't get involved in the game until the fourth quarter, and he kind of was, you could tell he was biting his tongue a little bit there. So a lot of speculation about Garrett Wilson being on the trade block, especially if the Jets are rebuilding. That's a player that you can get a lot of draft capital for. He's a former teammate of C.J. Stroud. The odds makers have placed Garrett Wilson for no real great reason other than he's a former teammate of C.J. Stroud,
and
I guess.
And the Texans have shown that they're a team that'll be aggressive in going after a wide receiver.
Correct. Yeah. So he's number two on the odds board to go to the Texans. This is before Tank Dell's injury.
Right.
So where are you on Garrett Wilson and that being a potential solution?
I'm in the boat of, like, what, you think that's going to fix something? We just spent an entire offseason with me trying to – I was unpopular because I was saying, hey, you really shouldn't expect 3 1,000-yard receivers. People were upset with me. They thought I was being negative because, like, that's just not the way good offenses work. But they didn't come anywhere close to that. They weren't even going to sniff it. And it's not just because of injury. It's that systemically, they're not operating like a team that can do anything with any of the talented guys they have on offense. If they don't make a change at offensive coordinator, my feeling is, why on earth are you even bothering with Garrett Wilson just so he can underperform in this offense?
Does Tank's injury, how big a priority? Let's pretend for a second. We've heard nothing about Tank relative to next season yet, but let's just go to that dark place where Tank is, at the very least, missing training camp and part of the season next year. How high up does wide receiver get bumped up the board of needs for this team?
I think it's up there. Yeah. I think, like, we've seen what can happen when Nico's your only guy. But again, a lot of that comes back to other systemic problems on the offense. That it's a need, but I don't know if that's they've spent so much money. They've spent so aggressively on free agents and or guys that they renegotiated after they traded. I'd rather fix the interior offensive line. But yes, if they do, let's say they target one high-priced free agent.
Yeah.
Or two. Like, that would be a typical offseason. An interior offensive lineman and Garrett Wilson would be A-okay with me.
The easiest fixes...
But it's not going to make me feel better.
No. The easiest fixes, and I think the ones that will make the fans feel better, coaching changes.
Yeah.
The easiest thing to do is change out your offensive coordinator.
That money doesn't hit your cap.
Right. Yeah. Find an offensive line coach that can communicate... I'm assuming that there's some sort of communication barrier with this offensive line because I don't think they're dumb guys.
No.
You know, like, I don't think they're unintelligent people. I think they've taken a coaching before, so there's something going on with how this is being communicated to them or taught to them that's not cutting through.
And they play hesitantly. It feels like on the offense right now, they're getting the worst version of everybody out there. Schultz in the first half of the season, I thought he wasn't a good blocker, but there were some bad moments, but on the sum total of it, it wasn't the worst in the world. Over the second half of the season, I cannot stand watching any more run plays where I can just, let me see where Dalton Schultz, any of the negative run plays. Oh, yeah, Dalton Schultz was getting destroyed on that play. Oh, yep, there he's getting destroyed there. It's awful. It's atrocious.
Dude, meanwhile, I mean, we're sitting here talking about a team that can't execute a missile screen. And when I say can't execute, I mean can't gain positive yardage.
Yeah.
They were all negative plays. On the TV in our studio here, they're showing the Lions doing a fake stumble against the Bears, mimicking a play from the Packers. When the Packers
unintentionally stumbled, but it worked out.
Against the Bears the previous week, they hit a shot downfield. The Lions basically looked at the play and said, we can fake a stumble like that in the backfield, and they did, and they hit LaPorta for a touchdown.
Mm-hmm.
That's the level the Lions are at right now.
One thing I pointed out to you while we were watching the game that was positive was CJ was really, he put some new emphasis on his play fakes. which you know, I'm a nerd for that stuff.
Yeah.
Like it's that at least was that was good.
Play fakes. Not the worst division.
No, it is. Champions. In this offense, it's a in any offense, really, but you got to sell the play action. And the running game isn't going to do it for you, so at least your quarterback can be a part of it.
All right, antibodies to you.
Oh, yeah, antibodies.
See you tomorrow at 6 a.m. Mark Vandermeer, John Harris. It's Texans Monday. They're up next.